Hey, sit down. There's more.
Hey, listeners, this is Sit Down, There's More by Talk Like a Mother podcast. Today's bonus episode is no reservation style, but not series focused. So sit tight and listen up.
Hey, everybody. Today in Sit Down, There's More, we are talking about Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. And this is book five, movie five. And I have to say, just like as a Rachel, this thing happened between four and five for me where I really transitioned. Like I took a deep dive into like Hogwarts, Potterhead, you know, by the time I was really into book or like into five, I had ordered all the books. I was listening in like on an audiobook and I completed all of that before I watched the movie. So like, I mean, I was like Harry Potter culture, a deep dive. Anyway, tonight we're going to talk about it. It is Jamie Ramos's favorite movie. Favorite book,
not favorite movie.
I will say, I already, in my first experience of book versus movie, movie versus book, have some bones to pick about this one. I do. Anyways, we're all here. We're going to talk about it. Also, everybody's here. Hey, everybody.
Hi, everyone.
Hey. Hello.
All right. So this, yes, is Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. This is the longest book and one of the shortest movies. 2 hours, 18 minutes. It's directed by David Yates. David Yates will, from here on out, direct the rest of the movies. Mm-hmm. And these are my favorite movies. I think he does the best at capturing kind of the essence of the books. But also, the books are very different from the movies. But he makes good movies. So it kind of, that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, makes them, I just see them as two separate things. So, but I really like these ones. This one came out July 11th, 2007. I was 18 years old.
Oh, that's my next question. Yeah.
So in Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, Harry Potter faces challenges both within.
Wait, Harry's 17 this movie?
15.
Oh, shit. Okay. Early bloomer.
In Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, Harry faces challenges both within and outside Hogwarts as he grapples with the denial of Voldemort's return by the Ministry of Magic and the oppressive rule of Dolores Umbridge at school. Alongside his friends, Harry forms Dumbledore's army to learn defensive magic in secret. When Voldemort manipulates Harry into believing Sirius Black is in danger, Harry and his friends rush to the Department of Mysteries only to confront Death Eaters and witness Sirius's tragic death at the hands of Bellatrix. In a battle, Harry is rescued by Dumbledore, who reveals the truth about the prophecy linking him to Voldemort. Despite the loss of his godfather, Harry finds solace and determination to continue the fight against darkness alongside Dumbledore and his friends. Bum, bum, bum. Hmm.
I just have to say from the start that that Dumbledore sounds like way more involved through that synopsis than he was in this movie. That most of that movie, he had the cold shoulder.
And in the book, too.
Mm-hmm. Should we start at the beginning where the Dementors are in whatever the Muggleville is just east of London? I don't know what the fucking Muggleville is called.
Surrey?
I live in Surrey.
Jen, just watch out. Just got to watch out.
You should go to some Quidditch this weekend.
Just some Dementors.
Don't be hanging out at the park by yourself. Well,
it's a muggle. So Harry's all grown up. He's had new hair and puberty has hit. It's hit hard, guys. He looks like a man.
He does, like a little dude. He's like a petite fella, but he's like, man.
Yep. So the movie starts and just like the overall thing is Harry's really down from Cedric's death. Also, Voldemort is back and the world is a lot darker place because of it. And Harry is darker as well. So the first thing that really happens in the movie, which is obviously different in the book, is immediately the Dementors attack Harry and Big D, Dudley.
Yeah, Big D.
Yeah, and he's a naughty boy and uses magic again.
Yes.
Outside of Hogwarts, which is not allowed.
But also, like, what is he supposed to do? Duds is just getting kissed by the Death Angel and he's like,
I mean,
watch.
Thomas a bitch. I don't know.
He's got
That's what gets him off at trial is that he used it in defense, like he had to use it.
Yeah.
But the Minister of Magic's trying to say that he's making up this whole Dementor thing and that the Dementors wouldn't do that.
Well, and they're just using it as an excuse to like get Harry expelled from Hogwarts, right? Because they
want to kind of ruin him and Dumbledore. Harry gets back to the house with Dudley and right away they like lock him in his room and all. Wait, that
no, before that the magical neighbor is there, remember how
Mrs. Fig, sorry, she comes
up. Yeah, Mrs. Fig, I didn't know her name.
So she appears to help Harry get Dudley back to the house. So the Dementors come and they like knock Dudley out because it's, I mean, he's not experienced this before. I feel a little bad for Dudley. Like he's knocked out even though he's a little shiz, but it's a product of his environment. So Mrs. Fig comes and gets Harry and she tells him that McGonagall is supposed to be watching over Harry, but he left. And so, and then this happened because he's Dumbledore like did not want Harry doing magic at all because of this.
Can I just read this? Dementor in real life, Muggleville, east of London. Magic moment after Dubs gets a kiss. Uncle is angry. Tonks and 12 Harrys.
That's in book 7. There's 12 Harrys.
There are all these Harrys that get him to the...
That's in the 7th
book. Oh, I'm too far.
Baby but Jesus. They do have... So I will say this, something that I'll bring up later too. In the book, after this happens, he's back at the house and the Uncle Vernon tries to kick him out of the house and Aunt Petunia gets a howler and it yells at her and says, remember the last. And then she all of a sudden is like, nope, he has to stay here. And so this is a big thing that's taken out of the movies. That's a little annoying. I can see why they took it out of the movies, but it kind of gives this back hint that like Petunia knows more than what she's saying. And her husband's very confused that she got that howler and that she changed, that she spoke up against him in that moment.
In the book, she's definitely like depicts her sister as this like total castaway when really it becomes more clear that she knows all about things that like,
yeah, she knows some, yeah,
on the edge at least, you know, not some, like yeah, her husband who's like, no, thank you.
Well, because she's never talked to him about her husband because he's so, I mean, she's anti as well, but he doesn't even want to hear about it, I'm sure. So then the arrival of some of the Order of the Phoenix. So Moody shows up with Tonks, Kingsley, and then a couple other people who they don't really name. I think one is supposed to be Alpheus Doge and then a lady. I don't know who's there. But anyway, this is really fast in the book, obviously, but they come and pick him up. And this is the real Mad-Eye Moody because the real Mad-Eye.
I was having trust issues out of the gate. So was Harry, but I really was.
So, and then they fly all through London, all crazy, just out on their brooms. It's like, what the hell? But it's cool shots. It looks pretty. To get to the headquarters of the Order of the Phoenix, which is 12 Grimald Place. And then, so we meet Tonks and Kingsley. Tonks is a metamorphosis. I can't remember what they call it. I'm so bad with these names. But she can change like her hair color on cue and like her face and stuff. Like it's kind of a cool little thing she has. So at 12, Grimald Place is the home of the Black family. So it's Sirius Black's home that he grew up in, but it's like kind of all dark magic because the Black family was bad. Like
very slithery.
Very slithery. So Sirius is there. And then Harry is like pissed because no one's talked to him all summer. And then Hermione comes in hot. She opens that door and she's like, Harry, and jumps in.
And like, their enthusiasm and like, you know, their friendship dial has been like way turned up. And he's just been like in this cranky, isolated, everything's on the edge of, am I going to get kicked out? Presh. Harry's always under the pressure, man.
That he learns from Sirius and Lupin and stuff that the ministry is in denial of Voldemort being back. They're trying to discredit Dumbledore and Harry Potter. And then Harry's just kind of mad that he's been in the dark about everything. And then Molly and Sirius, you can tell there's like tension between them because he wants Harry to know a lot. And Molly's very protective of Harry and doesn't want him to know everything. And there's this whole thing about her saying like, basically, you're just treating him like he's James, Harry's father, Sirius's best friend, but he's not James. And he's like, no, I'm not. And then later on in the movie, he calls him James and, you know. Another something that happens in the book is that Ron and Hermione become prefects and Harry takes that really hard because he's like, he thought he would be the prefect if any between him and Ron, it would have been him. But it's actually kind of, I love that moment because it's kind of a win for Ron. Ron never really gets a win, even though he's a whiny little butt.
Ron's getting better for sure. Ron is getting better throughout this. I even feel like all the Weasleys are aging up. They're doing better. You know how when we're at Molly's place that I never call the right spot, where it's like...
The Burrow?
They're always somewhat different. That's why.
Oh, yeah. At the 12, at the folks, at like Sirius's parents' flat, whatever. Right. Okay. So while we're there, Harry learns about all this fake news and everybody's like, oh, Fudge is such a prick, you know, but who is Fudge exactly? Is he like...
He's the head of the Ministry of Magic.
It's like political. So he's just almost to the papers as like King Charles is in that daily shit or daily press. It's like
they have. Well, he'd be like the prime minister. Like, so he's the Minister of Magic. So he's like equal to the prime minister who runs their country. Like, that's equal to our president. But he's only over the magic folk, the Minister of Magic.
Both Fudge and the fake news peeps are trying to say that, like, Voldemort is not even here and this is malarkey. Even though Dumble and Harry
they're in denial, basically.
Yeah. And he's, like, controlling the media. It's, you know, like, he's telling the media what they can and cannot say, probably. Or, like, he's probably giving them this, or like leaking, probably not directly giving them this information, and they're going to run with it because people are going to like want to read it. It's hot news, you know?
Yeah.
And people do not want to believe Voldemort's back. Like, this would be like if Hitler all of a sudden came back to life. Like, the way he like tortured and murdered and hurt people, it's like major fear from Voldemort coming back. So the Minister of Magic doesn't want, like, he would rather believe, he's in denial that he's back. He wouldn't want to believe that he's back. And just in case he really isn't back, like, he's like, okay, let's just say Dumbledore is crazy and just making this all up. He doesn't want to scare the whole freaking wizard world.
He doesn't want, like, the mass hysteria that would cause, and then he would have to, like, handle.
Yeah, I got that part.
And I think just overall, it's like, that, especially more in the books, it gets really political from here out, where, you know, like a lot of dictators and stuff come to be, Voldemort really starts trying to enter the sphere through the political realm. So he kind of infiltrates the Ministry of Magic first and takes over that way from here on out in the book. So it's kind of like he probably already has like people in there who have, you know, to like manipulate what's going on as well and to create that those issues.
Okay.
The mistrust. So they go, it's really cute when they travel because Arthur in the book, they don't talk about it as much in the movie. He loves muggle stuff. Like, he's like fascinated with it. So he's like excited to ride on the underground, and they go through the visitor entrance, which is the phone booth. And then I think the Ministry of Magic is so cool. Like,
that's Weasley's dad, the Weasley dad.
Oh.
And he's like, oh, like he's like out in this like world of people. And he's like, oh, look at these humans. Like,
so this is Harry and Dumbledore at Harry's trial.
Yeah.
And the Minister of Magic tried to like trick up Dumbledore. So Dumbledore, they tried to make it so he wouldn't even show up on time. They moved the trial up. But
He's like, I showed up 3 hours
That's
early.
Right.
You know, when we get to this Sirius folks flat, the headquarters of the Order of the Phoenix. And then they are describing to Harry that Dumbledore founded this like
Order of the Phoenix.
Order of the Phoenix when they were trying to defeat him the first time. Have they just been meeting on Thursdays ever since then? They like go off grid and then they show back up because Dumbledore, because
he like brings them back together. I mean, I'm sure in a way, like some of them have kept in touch, but they specifically come back together because Voldemort's back and they're trying to.
It's kind of like the reserves, right? And then like they're activated.
Well, and then a lot of the people that are in it now weren't in it before. It's just people who are like willing to fight. I guess a lot of people in the old order had died. The Potters were in there. The Longbottoms aren't dead, but they were in there. So Harry has this trial for using magic outside Hogwarts again. So Harry should have technically been in trouble the other times that he did this, like with the aunt and all that. But they were trying to protect Harry so much. He was such like a celebrity that he didn't really get in trouble for it. And it was like, it was honest mistakes when he did it. He wasn't in control of his magic. And this instance, they're trying to go after him, but he had to protect himself and Dudley against these Dementors. And so the minister still doesn't believe, you know, Dumbledore tries to be like, Voldemort's back, but Dumbledore comes to defend Harry and he won't really talk to Harry. And this is an ongoing thing that will go up till the end of the book, that Dumbledore will not really talk directly to Harry. And Miss Fig comes in again and she tells him what she said. And this is when we first meet Umbridge, who is the most hated character in all the books, just so you know, more than Voldemort. People hate her.
I see that.
Side note. If Amber Heard and Johnny Depp could redo their trial in that courtroom, yes, please. I love their court system where it's like this big hole where Harry has to sit in there and the neighbor, magic neighbor, and Dumbledore, and then like the whole threatening Umbridge panel of yucksters are the Ministry of Magic. I don't know. It's just such an interesting courtroom. Okay, so then I'm wondering, did the people, I want to watch back, like, did the people that voted for Harry to go back to Hogwarts, like, in the end, did all those people that voted yes end up being good people throughout? Because you know how they're, like, all in favor, and then, like, some lady's like, oh, me. Like,
Yes. So first of all, that's also a big thing is like when they show up normally there would be like a okay, someone say the word.
Disciplinary action.
There we go. Against Harry for doing that, but it would not be a whole trial. Like there would not be all those wizards there. Like that's why Dumbledore this is like insane. What are you doing here? But Madam Bones is the one who like she's kind of defending Harry and kind of being like, "Wait, what? There were dementors? What?" She ends up being murdered later on in the books, which you might know. And that's because she never turns. A lot of people at the ministry do get turned because they're literally like, when you get to book 7, they're like threatening people's families. They're doing like all this stuff. So a lot of people do turn or they like get out of there or they get kicked out because they're not purebloods. So, I mean, they don't really follow up a lot with any of those people because it's like Harry's story. But that lady gets murdered because of her staying with a...
Now I have that whole thing. Okay, so then it says, RF, so angry with Dumble throughout for this cold shoulder. Sirius at the trade station, like it's okay to have a horse-sized dog there.
He's not that big. So then they go to the train station and Sirius comes along as the dog, which he probably shouldn't do, which actually does kind of give him away in the books. And in the movies, I think Bellatrix says something towards the end of the movie that they know that he's able to be the dog or whatever. They have like this heart-to-heart conversation where Sirius expresses his concerns for Harry. He shows Harry Potter the photo of the old Order of Phoenix. We get the little plant of Neville's parents. I'm going to talk about that later, but I get really upset that they cut this storyline about Neville's parents out. And it's not even that big of a thing. But it just shows the bond between them, blah, blah. And then in the train station, this is the first time you kind of get the idea of like Harry being possessed. He like sees Voldemort outside the train. Do you guys remember that? And he's like making weird neck moves and stuff in the movie. So I'll say throughout this movie, the whole thing is that like somehow Voldemort and Harry are connected and like seeing each other's dreams and Voldemort's trying to manipulate his dreams.
Yeah, but this has been happening ever since he's been back, right? Pretty much.
Kind of, yeah. It was like the stronger Voldemort's getting, the more it's happening. And so it happened a little bit in 4 and now it's happening more and more. They make it more throughout the movie look like a possession, which I get why they did that because it's easier to like show that visually. In the book, it's not so much a possession. He does try to possess him at the end, the very end when that whole thing happens, but they keep like doing these flashes and stuff, which in the book, it's just Harry keeps having this dream and he's like really pissy and grumpy because technically Voldemort and him are connected and Voldemort's an asshole.
Can I ask you a question about the book, even though that's not what happens in the movie? In the book, during this sort of like part of the storyline, isn't it sort of that like he ends up getting through those flashback or like flashes or whatever as like a dream sequence, and every time he dreams it, he gets a little further, he gets a little bit deeper into it, and then he like ends up discovering what he needs to, like he sees more as he knows more kind of deal?
Yeah, well, it's also being, I mean, we'll talk about this at the end, but it's being planted in his brain more and more by Voldemort. Right. You're fine. Okay, so they arrive at the school. They see the thestral horse thing that only people can see if they have seen someone dead. And Luna comes. Luna's my favorite character of the books. I mean, right now, she's my favorite character. I love her. I love her a little more in the books, but I really like how the actress portrays her. And I'm pretty sure, a lot of people believe that she is on the spectrum. And I just love Luna.
I thought she was a figment of Harry's imagination at first. Like, because no, you didn't see anyone else talking to her. Only they saw those things. Like, he'd, like, come across her in the woods. Like, nobody else would be around. So, like...
Yeah, she's got no shoes on, like, Celie Flanagan.
When you said that, Kimmy, because you said that to me the first time when you watched me, I was like, that is true. It's always... Yeah. Until the very end, she's at the end with them. But she... It's just, like, her and Harry and these, like... And those don't even happen in the book. They kind of, like... She's not more in the movie necessarily than the book, but they really use her to like drive a lot of different things and drive the whole idea of that Harry is being more and more isolated. And she like talks to Harry about
and
that.
She's like, well, that's what I would do. Yeah, I would make it so you didn't have anybody. And he's like, oh, Yeah, wait a second.
That's one of the lines that makes me cry every time.
Oh my God, me too. I wrote,
And then we meet, so they get to school, and then Dolores Umbridge is there, the new Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. She's played by Imelda Staunton, who does such a good job playing her. Like, one of the few characters from the book that I was like, this lady got it right, but man, you hate her.
I hate her.
I call her Miss Umbridge.
My notes say Umbridge, douche and tweed, prohibited vibe. When Harry Potter gets to school, he's got that like misunderstood Harry against the world kind of thing because he's getting the cold shoulder from everybody who's been.
I was going to say, is that this one where everybody's kind of like mad at him?
Kind of like icy because like they've been reading all summer that this is bullshit in the papers, you know?
So they're trusting, you know, like, so Seamus is like the example of that. In the book, it's kind of more people, but Seamus is like, his mom didn't want him come back to Hogwarts because he thinks. She believes that Dumbledore and Harry are bad, all this stuff. And I wanted to play, I don't know if you guys will be able to hear, but Isaac does a Seamus impression and every time makes a laugh. So I made him send it to me. He's on a work trip.
Dad, you didn't want me to come back this year. It's because of you.
That's so funny.
But in the movie, it is kind of like abrupt and like, okay, Seamus, calm down. But anyway, but that just represents that people are believing the Minister of Magic and all the papers and stuff. So
fudge related free. I go, meanwhile, these flashes.
Yep. So that was the first time we really see the dream is right then, right? Of the hallway of the flash dream.
Oh, and then I wrote hashtag way better in the book.
That's what Jamie always
says. The owls are happening right away. And like Umbridge is looking over that. Isn't that happening?
Yeah, so in the book, they just call them OWLs. It really shouldn't bug me that they call them owls in the movie, but in the book, they just call them OWLs. But
yeah.
So Umbridge is the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, and
Defense of the Dark Arts teacher, like, it's always a problem.
Yeah.
So she comes in.
She said the idea of it, not the test. She's like,
She ends up taking over the school. And at that point, the kids have to take the OWLs no matter what. So she's running the school. So she basically takes over that because she's running the school. But all the teachers are prepping the kids. So this is like your ACT. So like each teacher in your subjects is prepping you for this test. But just to talk about Dolores, she comes in and it's made very clear that Dumbledore didn't appoint her, that the Ministry of Magic appointed her. And then she is trying to like undermine Dumbledore and she doesn't want
like
the kids.
She's there like in some filthy audit.
Yes.
But really, she's just there to like scheme and infiltrate. It's gross.
She's there to take over. And she doesn't want the kids doing any magic because the minister is afraid of like Harry taking over and creating his own little thing, which he does. And then she straight up is telling the kids at school, like, Voldemort's not back. This is a lie. And then she gives Harry Potter detention for standing up to her. And then he gets abused.
And she forbids magic. They can't use magic.
Yep.
So this says, put away your books. This spell class is going to be vanilla. But really, she wants to make them weak so that they can't fight B. And then it says, Harry Potter versus Umbridge and detention. Yuck, her cat office.
Her cat. I know the cat plates and stuff. It's a little much. I think Jen Dunn might love it. She has a lot of those decorative plates with cats on them, Jen, all over her wall. But it's Harry Potter, so they're all moving cats.
And it's also like this pretty in pink, like it is yucky.
So Hermione sees that Umbridge is basically abusing Harry, like, so she's making him write lines, and every time he writes the line he's using a special pen that carves it into his hand.
Yeah.
And so Hermione wants Harry to tell someone, and Harry doesn't
but Harry's not a snitch.
Yeah. Well, he wants to he's like, I don't want to give her that power. I don't want her to like think that she got to me, but it's also isolating Harry more. So it's kind of sad. And Hermione and Ron are really trying to reach out to Harry. And he writes Sirius like this letter about how lonely he is and how sad, how bad he feels all the time. And right after that, he has a conversation with Luna. And that's, I wrote down this line because I love it so much. And she goes, but I suppose that's how he wants you to feel. And Harry says, what do you mean? And she goes, well, if I were you know who, I want you to feel cut off from everyone else. And just the way she says it, it's just like,
what
a sexual predator does.
Or someone that's trying to kill you. Or take over your brain.
Oh my gosh. I go, page 5, more dreams, lots of bullshit. Later, Hermione sees Harry Potter's hand. Go to Dumble. Harry Potter says, no, because cold shoulder and ego. So Harry Potter is pulling away from Ron and Hermione, unlike when he was younger. Why is Luna shoeless? Is she being bullied?
She is.
And then what's a Nargle versus, that's not the invisible bird of the people that have seen death. That's called the
Thestral. The thing about Luna, so her and her dad, it's just her and her dad. She talks about her mom died when she was younger. They're kind of like offbeat. He writes for the Quibbler, which is like this silly, like, well, to him it's not silly, but it's like kind of like tabloids. Like it would be like aliens are back or UFO stuff, but it's all like this kind of crazy magic thing. So she like will say like, those are the Nargles or something, which things you can't really see that like they
just like this thing, that thing that she ends up being like, oh, got it, okay.
So she's just kind of, maybe it's real, maybe it's not, but she's a little crazy. Yeah, okay, so they put hints of that in the movie, but it's a lot more in the book.
My other Luna line right here says, they're quite gentle, really, but people avoid them because they're a bit different. Mm-hmm. They say different a few times in this movie that just like punches me in the soul.
Yeah. And that's the under thing with Luna is like, she's clearly being bullied and like teased, and it happens more in the book. They kind of like, Jenny kind of sticks up for her, and Hermione, mm-hmm. like they do feel bad for her. So a lot of kids call her Loony Luna. But it's clear that like, but she doesn't, I mean, she doesn't really understand that she's being bullied, which is really sad and makes me want to cry. So next there's the Umbridge and McGonagall argument, where McGonagall, Hermione clearly told McGonagall. And just from a weird dorky film nerd thing, I love the blocking of the scene where they're on the stairs arguing, and then Umbridge ends up higher than like McGonagall, like showing that she's winning. And I just love it. And then the whole montage of Umbridge, like going to each class, like you said, she's like critiquing each teacher. And I just love, like, she goes after Snape and he's like, obviously. But she like goes after each teacher, and she's Trelawney. She ends up, and in the books more than the movie, McGonagall really doesn't really like Trelawney. And like, even her, so like, it's even a bigger deal that McGonagall stands up for Trelawney. And it's heartbreaking in the movie and in the book, her firing her in front of all the students. Like, that's...
Yes, humiliating.
There is, like, when there's this standoff between Maggie Smith and Bitchbridge, like that...
Is lady, that the psychic lady?
No, this is McGonagall. Maggie Smith is McGonagall. So, you know, when they're in that first fight, the students are watching like they are at the Beatles concert. They are like mouth open, holy Christmas, these two are fighting. Like,
no, I meant the one that they fired.
Yeah. But, yep. Okay, so then she gets this promotion, the pink kitten cave, the tweed study stays. I said, because she's not the dark arts teacher, she is now at the school.
Dumbledore, like, gets kicked out in a little while,
stepping in.
So before all that happens, yeah, so Trelawney gets fired. Dumbledore stops her. Trelawney can be fired by her, but she can't be kicked out of the castle. Sirius talks to Harry and lets him know, like, through the fire, which is kind of important because later on, but it's kind of like flu powder, but you can just travel and talk to someone with just your head. So that's when Sirius tells Harry, like, the minister is afraid that you're going to start, like, some band against him, like, a group against him. And so Hermione gets the idea to start Dumbledore's army. So they form a secret group of students who practice defense against the dark arts with actual magic. And they
first meet in a secret room.
Yeah. They meet in this off bar that you'll see again in book 7 called the Hogshead. And then they find the Room of Requirement to practice in. So in the books, Dobby shows him where the Room of Requirement is. Dobby's not here once again. It makes me sad. But the Room of Requirement's this whole thing. Like, you have to walk past this wall so many times and, like, be really thinking what you want. But the room becomes whatever you want. And it's one of my favorite things in the book. I think it's so cool. A funny thing about Trelawney in the books is she's a little bit of a drinker, and she hides her sherry bottles in there. And there's a story one time about Dumbledore talking about how he had to go to the bathroom really bad one day. And he was trying to find one, and he found, I don't know, it's just kind of funny that this room became a bathroom for him. But it's just like,
cherry bottles,
the coolest room. And it becomes really important in 6, the Room of Requirement, and kind of in 7 too. And then one of my favorites, so this is, they're all walking back to the castle and they're walking over the bridge. Harry's like in love with Cho Chang, or really has a crush on her. And Hermione brings it up. And this is just so random, but it's one of my favorite things. The actress that plays Jenny right when she's walking back, because Jenny always had a crush on Harry when she was younger. And Hermione brings up Cho Chang and she's like, ooh. And then the actress who plays Jenny kind of makes a face like, ugh. Like, it just, I love it so much. So then Umbridge starts her own little squad thing, and she puts like all the a-hole students, like Malfoy and stuff, in that. So that in the books kind of takes over the prefects. So like Hermione and Ron like barely get to be prefects.
The names are terrible. Can I just say this? The names are terrible. Terrible.
Like Umbridge is so direct. Like she has Umbridge with everyone. Harry has his first kiss with Cho Chang.
No. Wait, hold on. I need to tell you on my page 7, it says HP to teach the dark arts in a secret room. HP's all, this is what it's like to have adult-sized crisis when your vagal nerve is super f***ed from constant fight or flight. Listen up. Like, hey, listen, we're going to handle some big, serious stuff, and it's going to be for real. So if you want to learn this for real, this is what's going to be. And then I write, oh, shit, this is when Neville gets hot. Call Jamie.
Oh, I still don't think he's hot. To me, he doesn't get hot till after the movies, but he does improve from.
Yeah, he's like the least offensive haircut in this movie.
I'll send you guys a picture of Neville now, but.
More meetings, more of Umbridge watching, more flashbacks. Umbridge starts questioning everyone until she figures out what's what. So after a while, Umbridge and the Bleach and Tone are in cahoots, but Harry's back to feeling connected to H&R. So also his dark arts group. I did not like Cho at all.
So Cho, she was in love with Cedric, and Harry's always kind of had a crush on her. And so she's a teenage girl, and Hermione explains it really well. Like, she still has feelings for Cedric, but she's sad that he's obviously died. And so she feels weird about having feelings for Harry. I kind of love Hermione's speech at that point, because it's so like, oh, this is how much girls think about things, and this is how 0% boys think about things. So it's like,
yeah.
And I love Emma Watson's laugh at the end of that, which I think was just like an outtake that they put in the movie. Anyway, so then Harry has the dream of Arthur being attacked, Mr. Weasley, and goes to Dumbledore to tell him what happened. This is really different from, so in the movie, they go straight, like the Weasleys all get gathered up and they go straight back to Grimmauld Place. Oh. Because it's Christmas break, technically, anyway, was going to be the next day. So he has to, like, sneak them out of the castle so Umbridge doesn't know. But Dumbledore still won't make eye contact with him. And Harry goes, look at me! And he, like, yells at Dumbledore. And he's like, what is happening to me? And it's kind of heartbreaking because Harry knows, like, something is wrong with me. I just literally attacked a man in my dream. And he really was attacked. What the F? And Dumbledore's not freaking telling him anything. So instead, he has Snape come get him, and
in like a matter of worst gets worse.
Yes,
I go. Madness drives HP to Dumble, begging, "What is happening?" So Dumble sentences HP to torture with Snape this night. HP says, "Read it, control it, unhinge it," because HP versus V, they're connected till the end. He's learning like that finally that they're like.
Yeah, so they're through.
One of them has to kill each other or whatever.
Well, that's the reveal at the end of the movie. But yeah, like, so they're connected, but they're figuring out they're connected. Voldemort doesn't even realize at first what's happening between them, but that they're connected because of the way Voldemort was like kind of killed by Harry, but obviously not fully killed. So he has to have occlumency lessons from Snape to try to stop this mind control thing.
I hate it.
But Snape's kind of a butthole, but knows how to do this really well. And Dumbledore himself won't teach Harry. And we'll find out later why. Because Dumbledore's worried about triggering Voldemort. Because the one wizard like in the world that Voldemort's actually scared of is Dumbledore. But he's afraid that he would use Harry to get to Dumbledore somehow. So that
trifecta is too dangerous to like have Dumbledore deal with. Yeah.
Yeah. And so.
Or open up rather.
Yeah. So then it's Christmas. So this is what happens in the book.
Oh.
I'm really sad they cut out. So in the book, they go to Grimmauld Place right after Harry has this dream about Arthur. And then they go to the hospital, visit Arthur, who's been attacked by Voldemort, his snake, in the Ministry of Magic, guarding something. We don't know what yet in the book. But they go to St. Mungo's, which is the wizard hospital. And there, they're like just walking around, exploring or whatever. And they run into Neville, who's there visiting his parents. And it's like the saddest thing in the book. Well, there's a lot of really sad things. I'm like, I guess that's not saddest. But Neville's parents had been tortured to like an extreme by Bellatrix Lestrange, who comes back in this book, and Neville's visiting at the hospital with his grandmother, and it's just like the saddest thing because Neville didn't want anyone to know. He's like a little embarrassed that his parents are like in like the psych ward. Mm-hmm. Like they don't even really recognize him. His mom keeps bringing him like wrappers, and it's like the saddest thing. Like I'm gonna cry again thinking about it. But anyway, he talks about it in the movie, but they don't show this whole thing. And it's one of like it just like builds up who Neville is in the book, which we'll talk about in seven. Like Neville actually plays a really big role, and he could have actually kind of been in Harry's place. So it's
they even start to say that in this one, like say it out loud. You just don't really catch it.
Okay, look at your phones and see the glow up of Neville Longbottom.
Oh, that's
he looks now.
Why does that have to be his name, you know? Oh.
Isn't he hot?
Yeah. But okay, let's just talk about how all Harry Potter characters besides Hermione, who has the worst name, all of them have the worst hair possible.
Well, this is probably from book four or from movie forward. And just so you know, Hermione in the UK is a very common name. It's like,
I can't handle it. Just because I visually can't spell it. Like a visual problem.
No, I agree. And it's like, it's hard to say. It's hard to like visualize. It's just like,
I read popular. It with my eyes. Hermione.
My sister first read the books too, as we said, it's so different.
So funny. I love when he shows up at Christmas. Like, I will say, like, as of Rachel, when I watch the movies, every Christmas, like, there's a Christmas scene in every single one, you know? I take, like, a get up and take a break. Because it's like, I'm emotionally exhausted. Especially when you know the book and then you do the movie. Because it's like life and fast forward. I used to think if these movies dragged on forever.
Yeah.
But then you have something to compare it to and you're like, holy shit, I need a break.
That's what I just don't think. I mean, I kind of just think about them separate things, but obviously when I'm like reviewing it like this, I'm like, but this explains this, but I already have that background knowledge when I watch the movie. So I don't even think I think of that consciously all the time.
Yeah.
So Arthur makes a big toast to Harry for like saving him and everything. But Harry's like conflicted about that. Cause he's like, but technically Harry's like, at this point, he's like, did I attack you? Was that me? Like Harry does not freaking understand what happened. And then they have that scene in front of the Black family tree, which is like, the art direction and the movies here on out are like my favorite thing. That Black family tree is so cool. And then like the mom had like scorched out the people who like went to the good side technically. So like Sirius's face is scorched out. And so is Tonks's mom.
Oh, there's so much stuff I never even saw while I was watching these things. That's what I'm telling you. I don't see it that deep. I never saw it that deep.
Yeah, it's talked about in the book, but it's just shown in the movie. But Harry talks to Sirius and it's really sad because he's like, I'm so angry all the time. So J.K. Rowling, who's like a controversial person.
He says, am I becoming bad?
Yeah, he said, I'm so angry all the time. But she, a big thing that she talks about is like, she's dealt with depression and stuff a lot. Like around the, like before she was writing the book, she was suicidal and stuff. She puts a lot of like things about depression in the books. And so like this whole book is like, a lot of people actually don't really like this book because they think Harry's like dark, really down and mopey the whole time. But it's, I don't know. I love it. I love the interpretation. But anyway, I'm going to read real fast what Sirius says to Harry. It says, you're not a bad person. You're a very good person who bad things have happened to. Besides, the world isn't split into good people and Death Eaters. We all got both light and dark inside of us. What matters is the part we choose to act on. That's who we really are. I love him so much.
I go, what matters is the part we choose to act on. That's who we really are. He is prophet vibes.
And it's just like the sweetest thing. I would say Sirius is a little more immature in the books, but Gary Oldman, who plays Sirius Black.
That's why you know this is a beautiful bedtime story. Your very soothing voice to listen to you, ladies. Thank you. I just wanted to know that.
I feel like I'm back.
We're better than melatonin. Oh my God. Finally, this is when we first see Hagrid, isn't it?
Yes. Hagrid's, that's it. They get back to school and Hagrid's back. Thank Christ. Right away, Umbridge is up his butt.
Yeah.
Yach. She does not like anything. She doesn't like anything that's like half breed and hair. And I mean, she doesn't like giants at all, but she does not like that he's half giant. A lot of people don't like really that he's half giant, but she's like,
I think that tall lady from the other films does.
You know, but that's a thing in the book, fourth book, is she is technically half giant, but she won't admit to that. She just says that she's a big bone because,
she's of like how people, that she's 17 feet tall.
Well, and also
I'm big boned.
Giants are like as big as a freaking mountain. Hagrid is half giant. His mother is the giant. I am very confused onto how Hagrid was made.
What?
Jamie, where there's a will, there's a way.
I just am like, how did she get pregnant?
I don't think she went on top, is all I'm saying.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, she's as big as a mountain. I mean, how tall could this guy be?
He just like did it out in a field and instead he gets this lady pregnant. He's like, I thought that was a cave.
And thank goodness it's not the other way around. But I'm very confused about it's
really. Oh my God, this is too much.
Oh God.
Oh, that'd be terrible. Oh, God. Oh, that'd be terrible.
Anyway, okay.
After dark.
So Hagrid tells him that he was on a secret mission to like go work with the giants, and it kind of failed, the whole mission. But he went with what's her face from the other book.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember right now because it's very late at night. And then we jump to, there's been an Azkaban breakout. So the hint, hint at the beginning of the book that the ministry clearly isn't controlling the Dementors anymore because they went and attacked Harry, which was probably from Voldemort. But they were the ones that guarded this prison. The Dementors were guarded in Azkaban. Hello to Bellatrix. Helen Bonham Carter is here.
Okay.
One of my favorite actresses. And I think she does such a good job playing Bellatrix.
Also, hair goals.
Love
I bet she wakes up just like you. Okay, I have a question about Dementors versus Death Eaters, the Department of Ministry. Like, they all seem like everybody's lost goddamn control, and then everybody pretends like they're in control of that or have a negotiated contract with these people. Like, oh, the ministry is dealing with the Dementors. They're just protecting the schools. Like, how backwards is that? Is that real?
So that only happens, the Dementors weren't, they weren't really protecting the school. They were looking for Sirius Black because they're the guards of the prison. So they Azkaban. Guard the prison. Yeah, so the whole deal with them is that they get to have control over the prison. And then the whole part of, like, the ministry being in denial that Voldemort's back is the Dementors are going to go to Voldemort because Voldemort's offering them, hey, if you're on my side and I win, you guys can have free reign over Muggles. So right away, he gets the Dementors back on his side, and that's why they go attack Harry. And that's how all these old Death Eaters break out of Azkaban. And they're like the worst Death Eaters, like the diehard Death Eaters that were willing to go to jail to support Voldemort.
Well, and Bellatrix is like, hey, girl, I'm back.
Yeah, she's like the worst of the worst. She's technically Sirius's cousin, and she's Malfoy's aunt. Malfoy's
mom. When you sent me the family tree file that you sent me of those mofos, those dirty, like, most of them are dark names. They're, like, not great peeps, you know?
She's crazy as a bat out of hell.
She's crazy, but she plays it so well.
She does, yeah.
I
want to let you know that in my notes between when we introduced Hagrid and Grop a little bit, like just the beginning, I wrote, I don't know if we know this at first, but the baby brother is a huge effing feral giant. But who chains up a baby giant? Call for an assessment and start services.
CPS.
Like, I'm like, this is terrible. This is going terrible. Get this kid some help.
Giant CPS.
Also, is a tree really going to stop a giant? Just saying.
Yeah.
Well, like, if he grows, like, he's like a baby giant right now. If he grew to, like, his full giant size.
Yeah.
And again, even at the size he's at now, I do not understand. Whatever. Okay. Then
I go. So then we find out that breakout, but I'm emotionally exhausted. Neville, maybe hubba hubba, shining in the new year, but he confides in Harry Potter that his parents are gone too because Order of the Phoenix.
Yeah. So that's where he tells Harry that his parents were driven crazy by Bellatrix, who just broke out of prison. And so it's really hard for him hearing that she's broken out of prison. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people think that Neville's parents are dead, but they're not dead. They just are hospitalized because they've been driven literally mad. And then we find out that Cho basically told Umbridge about the DA. And
but wasn't she given a potion or something? Didn't we find out that?
So that's revealed towards the end. Snape tells Umbridge, like, you use the rest of my truth potion on Cho Chang. And so that's Harry kind of probably feels guilty about that. But
that's
in
the potion I was thinking you were talking about at the beginning.
Oh, no, Veritas Serum? Yeah.
Different. Okay.
So they end up in Dumbledore's office. The minister comes down, all stuff, because he finds out they have the secret group. And Umbridge at some point disbanded any clubs or groups. In the book, it's a whole thing. Like, they can't even do Quidditch without permission, all this stuff. Anyway. And in the book too, it's not Cho who tells, it's her best friend. And Hermione cursed whoever told about the thing to have, like, this traitor. I can't remember what it says, but, like, permanent, like, this girl cannot get rid of him. It's kind of sad. Anyway, so Dumbledore gets confronted by the minister. So Dumbledore takes the fall for Harry. And he's like, well, it's called Dumbledore's Army and it's really sweet. And they wanted, like, arrest him. But Dumbledore is a badass. And he's like, no, I'm leaving. And so he just disappears, and in the book, he knocks them all out and tells Harry to keep up with his occlumency lessons. And then he disappears, but he just leaves. And now Umbridge is the headmistress of the school. She takes over the school fully now. And then
my note says The parchment says Dumble mofo, not Potter's peeps. Umbridge, more fake news, more flashes, more snake torture, more H and Ron chemistry. Until Dumble has had enough. More rules, less joy.
Yeah. There you go. So yeah, she keeps putting all these rules about everything, and then she's like mean to the kids. She's physically abusing multiple children with the hand thing. And then
she's the like slaps somebody, like cold ass slaps somebody.
Yeah.
She takes the wand and she like fixes like their clothes or like, yeah, like different things like that. It's kind of funny.
It is kind of funny.
Oh, I want to take those little things, the plaques up on the wall. I just want to take them all and smash them. Stop hanging
like the hammering. Like, bam,
yeah.
Bam. But she's just so gross. Like, she's just taking away the magic of the magic.
She's a lot.
I quote, H says, Chow Cho.
Oh, yeah. You feel bad for Cho later when you find out like that she was forced to tell. And even at that point, I think in the movie, you feel like she was tortured to tell or something like,
yeah,
that she, you know, so you feel bad for Cho. And then so Harry has another occlumency lesson with Snape. And this goes up. There's a lot more of these in the book and stuff, obviously. But this one goes bad because Harry goes into Snape's mind and he basically finds out that his dad was like a bully to Snape. And that all the stuff that Snape's been saying about his dad is like, in a way, kind of true. Like Sirius and James are very rude to Snape growing up. Harry compares him to Malfoy a lot. He's like, my dad was more like Malfoy when I thought my dad was probably more like, you know, how Harry sees himself. He probably thinks he was a pretty good guy. During the Alexams, Fred and George decide to quit Hogwarts and they go out with all the fireworks and stuff. Like they do a lot more in the books, which is kind of funny, like to really like torture Umbridge, like they flood the school, like all this different stuff, but they like set out these really cool fireworks. And I love that scene. It's such a fun scene.
So good. I said, Weasley bros are like, watch this, snake fireworks that happen to hunt bitches in Tweed.
During that, right? That's when Harry has like Harry passes out and has a vision of, he sees like the whole vision that he's been slowly seeing of like going into the hallway toward the store. And he sees that Voldemort is basically torturing Sirius at the Department of Mysteries, which is in the Ministry of Magic.
Yeah. And at that point, like, he actually, like, finally learns that it's a prophecy that's, like, locked in there. Or, like the prophecy, the words the prophecy comes up there for the first time, right?
Kind of, like, once they get to the ministry, right? Or once they get to the department. So, yeah. So, Harry believes that Sirius is in real danger. And he wants to go straight. In the books, he wants to go straight to the ministry. And Hermione stops him and makes him do the whole fire thing. But in the movie, just to skip time, that Harry comes up with the idea. And then they get caught right away by Umbridge and they basically have to trick her. Hermione tricks her into the forest.
What is that already?
Yeah, they go. Well, they get caught and Harry. Oh, so that's when Snape comes in and Harry tries to tell Snape what's going on, like coded. Like they have Padfoot. Oh, yeah. And Snape is like, I don't know what you're talking about. And so both
of the movie,
Harry's like Snape's not helping us. When Snape really actually does try to go help them, he tries to figure out. Whereas he just doesn't freaking like report back to Harry or check that Harry doesn't take off and go to the ministry, which he does.
I thought it was really sweet how he's like, no, I'm going to do this alone. I'm not going to put you guys at risk. And they're like, we're all in this together.
And yeah, it's like that part of the whole thing of like him isolating himself. And
this says, we're finally using that effed up forest for our good. Send that bitch out. So the trifecta plus the dark arts friends result in friending super troop. Neville, Luna, Ginny, Ron, Hermione, and Harry. And then it says, or then I write, Harry Potter thinks he has to be the hero, but the friends are like, hold up, those handy dandy theogens, what are they called?
Thestrals.
Thestrals take the super troop to the Department of Ministries and they get down to it. But will their Harry secret lessons be enough?
It's got some mystery. I want to say too, so Hermione tricks Umbridge to go into the forest and the centaurs like take off with her basically because she's mean to them because she thinks wizards should be overall. And really in the books they explain a lot more that centaurs actually think they're a lot wiser than wizards and all this stuff, and so like they're uber offended. And there's this whole drama in the book about there being a centaur teaching at the school, blah blah, but they take her, they like drag her ass off into the forest. And in the book Dumbledore talks about how you have to go in there and like get her back. It's kind of crazy. But yeah, they get, so they all take off on the Thestrals to the Ministry of Magic. So we go back to the Ministry of Magic. They go to where Harry saw in the dream where Sirius was. He gets there and Sirius is not there. And then, dun-dun-dun-dun, Lucius Malfoy is there. Death Eater.
I hate that Lucius.
Oh, I can't stand him either.
Draco is not really in this movie a lot. I realized that watching. I was like, yeah, it's kind of interesting. Anyway,
he shows up only during that like Umbridge tomfoolery where she's like looking around and he's like one of the pricks that she can control. Yeah. There you go.
And so
why does Lucius know so much? Like, what's his position? Isn't so he's a Richie?
He's in Voldemort's inner circle.
Yeah. And he's like,
I know, but what about in the ministry? What's his role in the ministry?
Oh, he's just there waiting. Like, he probably just snuck in. Again, I don't know exactly what his role in the ministry is supposed to be in the movies. In the book, he's like just a really wealthy, prominent figure. He's like almost like a politician in a way. He's like,
But he's just
governors
like
of the school.
In stuff. There.
But he just has money. He's old money. So he, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's no stranger. And I think
plus he's like a Death Eater. I mean, he's like been in the troop the whole time, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean,
so all like the Death Eaters are in there basically waiting for Harry to show up. Because this has all been a trick. So you basically in that scene find out that Voldemort's been like infiltrating Harry's mind and misled Harry to come to save Sirius when Sirius wasn't even there at all. And in the book, Harry tries to go. That's why he goes to Umbridge's office to try to check on Sirius to make sure to see if he's really at home or if he's at the ministry. And Creature tells him, Creature's like, no, he's not here. He went, I think Creature says he went to the Ministry of Magic or something like that. And so you find out later that Malfoy's wife told Creature to tell Harry that. Anyway, so that's, they all set up this whole thing to trick Harry to get here because there's this prophecy on the shelf. And only the people who the prophecy are about can grab it. And so Harry has to grab it because it's his prophecy, but it's about him and Voldemort. And Voldemort wants that prophecy. And so all Harry technically needs to do at this point is give over the prophecy, but he doesn't want to do it because obviously he knows it's very important to Voldemort. And so this breaks out into a whole battle where these young kids are battling these Death Eaters. And in the book, this goes on a lot longer. The kids are like...
Totally.
Up. Like they get pretty injured, like to the point Harry thinks some of them have died. No one died kid wise. But then they have this whole battle and then they end up in like this weird room where there's like this veil thing. In the book it's a curtain veil, but in the movie it looks different, which is fine. Fine. And so they're battling in there and then the Sirius and all of the Order of the Phoenix people show up to save the kids, to help the kids. And so they all, it turns into this huge battle and it's really cool, I think.
It is. I mean, that's like action, like fight scene. I mean, like big. My thing says, Lucius, that bee is showing you what he, or that Voldemort is showing you what he wants you to see. And then I was like, there's got to be more to it. There's half a movie left. Bellatrix Lestrange. She outs Neville. How's mom and dad? Are they about to be avenged? And I was like, what? When I watched back now, because I've watched the rest. So I was like, oh my God, look at her talking about it so soon.
Yeah, she's the meanie.
I said, and then theory swirl. Okay, now shit gets dark and questionable. Do his friends fall like trees in a tornado? Suspense builds. Luna hears the voices too, the Dementors, because where there's a Bleach and Tone or a Bellatrix, there are Dementors.
There's not Dementors there.
Death Eaters, maybe. It was
Death Eaters. I like this. I like the part where Sirius shows up. So when they all jump in, Sirius shows up and he punches Malfoy in the face. So a fun thing in the movie is like Gary Oldman, the actor who plays Sirius, came up with that. So they kept doing a bunch of takes, you know, and he's like, can we do one where I punch him in the face? And they kept that take. And I just
took a
bit. Get off my grandson or my godson or whatever. And then Sirius is killed by Bellatrix suddenly. Ugh. And it's very sad. I think I told Kimmy and Rachel both when they told me they finished this movie, I was like, yeah, there's times I'm like driving just randomly and I think about Sirius Black dying and I cry. It's very sad because it's like Harry's like last hope for like a parent figure. And it's.
Yes. My note says Lucius is still giving. No, give me the prophecy, mofo. Watch your besties die or else again. And then I said, but just then shit turns up. Smoke machines. Moody, the Order of the Phoenix in the house. Bellatrix says, Avacadava. Avacadava? Is that really what you say? And then Sirius Black dies. And then I said, a sliver of Harry Potter's hope and for his last hope for unconditional love in present real life. But this is where Harry gets to choose. So, like, is he bad or good? That meanwhile, Dumble has had enough. He's all over it again. Dumble fights B again, and B gets this.
So yeah, so I love this scene when when Dumbledore and Voldemort fight. Also, I always joke, I'm like, this is the Dumbledore, like I love. Like, he's just like the greatest wizard basically of all time. He's just like a bad A. And he, like, they go at it. And it's like, I don't know, it's just kind of fun to watch all the magic and like them fighting. In the book too, he like uses the statues to like hold Harry back and hold down Bellatrix, but Bellatrix just escapes when they start fighting. But, and so more in the movie. So in the book, like, Voldemort towards the end just kind of possesses Harry for like a second, and then Harry thinks about how sad he is about Sirius and it stops. But in this, it's like a really big thing where like the possession comes to like a head where like Harry has to fight Voldemort out. And in the book, like, when it does happen, Harry's like, just kill me because this is so bad. But it's really sad. But it, and then there's like all those flashbacks, and it's really how Voldemort was taking over Harry Potter's brain this whole time. And how Harry gets him out is like because he has love and friendship in his life, which is really cheesy and kind of whatever, but it's also like,
yeah,
I love it.
Only light can drive out hate, you know? It goes back to that old mantra.
He says, it isn't how you are alike, it's how you are different. It's time for Ragey Tears with Dumbledore's Message of Love, Friendship Edition. Reinforcing that the thing that makes Harry more powerful is love, which is the second half of the prophecy. Also, finally, Dumble explains the cold shoulder approach. Hey, Dumble, is this the best idea? I was so mad at him. I've been so mad at him. I mean, later he even sees it, that choice.
So, like, I mean, as, like, a nerd who's probably way too much into, like, the Harry Potter world knowledge, a lot of people have a lot of criticisms of the character of Dumbledore. But I always explain, like, Luna's my favorite character. Dumbledore's probably my second favorite character. Mm-hmm. And I think what I really like about him is, like, if you know, like, the idea of, like, the hero's journey, like, the mentor, the ally, whatever. Like, Dumbledore's clearly the mentor. But he's so imperfect. And he's just trying to do what's right for Harry. Like, he's so idolized in the books. Everyone talks about him being, like, the greatest wizard and all stuff. But when it really comes down to it, he's really just human. And this was, like, his best approach to the situation. Like, he thought he knew what he's doing right. And so when they get back to Hogwarts, in the book, it's right away. They go right away and they meet Harry. And Harry's, like, pissed. He's throwing things in Dumbledore's office. He's, like, destroying his stuff because he's so pissed and sad. And Dumbledore says to him, I mean, in the book, in the movie, but it's a little more... Harry's a little more combative in the book, but he's just like, this is my fault. He's like, it's my fault Sirius is dead. I approached this all wrong. And like, he admits it all to Harry. And it's like, just kind of like heartbreaking, but what else was he kind of supposed to do? Cause Voldemort really was trying, would try to like destroy him through Harry. And then the book too, Dumbledore really goes through all the way back to book one. He's like, I should have done this here. I should have done this here. Mm-hmm. I'll say first, like, Dumbledore explains the prophecy, like, and what it,
meaning
like
the first and second half.
Yeah. He explains that, like, the prophecy, basically, who what was given by Trelawney, which you kind of find out, which is funny because it's like the one good prophecy she's ever given, or there's been two. Between Harry and Voldemort, only one can live while the other survives. So Harry basically finds out that he has to defeat Voldemort. He's the only one that can. And Dumbledore also explains to Harry that, which is more so in the book, that the reason that he's protected by Voldemort is because his mom sacrificed herself for him.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Jen's still awake, but Jen asked this before, why Harry has to be at the Dursleys. He explains there that because Lily's sister, Petunia, has Lily's blood, their blood relation, that blood protects Harry. So as long as Harry calls the Dursleys his home, that protects him from Voldemort. So that's why he has to go back to the Dursleys all the time. And that's, and he had told Petunia that in the very beginning when they dropped off that baby at the doorstep, he wrote that in that letter. And that howler,
and that's
that,
the howler,
that the howler that got sent at the beginning of this book to Petunia was reminding her, like, hey, Harry has to live here. You have to protect your nephew. And she knows who Voldemort is and all that kind of stuff. Like, she knows that Voldemort killed her sister. And on some deep level, obviously, that is hard for her. And she doesn't want Harry to die, like, the last thing left is. Anyway, so Dumbledore explains all that. But it's kind of like this mentor and student turning point for Harry. He is given this role, not really by Dumbledore, but just by the situation. And Harry takes that mantle up. So from here on out, it's like Harry has a new mission, and it is to kill Voldemort. And it's just like this crossing the threshold, like, Harry's entering like into his purpose, and it's like a big moment in the movie and the book, but it's also like kind of a sad
but it's
thing.
Like, I also feel like in a way, like, they use her.
Yeah, well, and it gets, I mean, even when you get to the
wait
end of the seventh book, which is the eighth movie, it really becomes clear, like, Harry is the only way to kind of defeat Voldemort, because now that Voldemort's back and he took Harry's blood, it's a little sad because and that's what I'm talking about, like, Dumbledore is kind of a flawed character, but he's also kinda protecting the world. Yeah. But he loves Harry Potter at the same time. So it's really hard. Mm-hmm, and when we get to book seven, Harry has a really hard time coming to terms with who Dumbledore really is.
Dumbledore, we learn later that there's like some shittiness in his beginning as well.
Yeah.
Which is why like that orphaned boy vibe, he identifies so much with it and like wants him under his wing. Like not just within his little cape.
Yeah.
You know, like super, like it's deep.
That's what I say. A lot of people like are pissed at Dumbledore for that. I think he's like a bad adult, like kind of taking advantage of this kid in a lot of ways. But it's also kind of
I feel like it's like a double, like, yes, he does care about them and looks out for him, but like he also knows that Harry's the key to like what they need. So like it's like a two-sided coin.
And it's not like some stupid run of the mill deal. I mean, if Voldemort comes back, it's like the end of magic. It's like the end of good. And it's
So Voldemort, basically, I guess I should, like, his goal is to get rid of, not necessarily even get rid of all the Muggles, but technically to like enslave every Muggle. So he wants the wizards to be all powerful. And he thinks anyone that's, although this is contradictory because Voldemort's a half blood. If you're not a full blood wizard, you're like not really supposed to be a wizard in his eyes. So he wants to get rid of the Muggles. He wants to strip anyone of like their ability to have access to magic who's not a full blood wizard. So he's all about pure bloods and all this crap.
It's so gross because this stupid Voldemort dumbass just fights for himself. And it's all about him winning for himself and like him, I mean, winning, so to speak, right? Like, but it's all like him focused where Harry, like, it, especially in this book, stands into this, like, teaching and learning from his friends. Like, he had so much ego that he wants to do it alone, but then he needed his friendships, the big bad six, you know? Like, then, I don't know. I mean, I just feel like he's learning and teaching and accepting and seeing so much more, you know?
And the way that Voldemort attracts people is his whole pitch is, like, we shouldn't have to be in hiding. We have more power, we should be able to take control. And so like really, like, this is like for little kids reading these books and like growing up with these books and becoming a teenager, it kind of is like almost a history lesson of things that have really happened in our world and how a lot of dictators and stuff come to be.
Well, he feels like he has suffered the biggest injustice, like they all do, you know, in his mind.
He's really just like a narcissist.
Yeah.
Evil guy. But anyway, so then Harry has one more conversation with Luna, who's trying to look for all her stuff because all the kids hide her stuff, those little D-holes. Come on, Ravenclaw, you butts. They're so mean to Luna. And then it kind of ends with him and his friends like, all right, we have each other. The band is together. So it's really sweet. And that's the end.
My page 16 says, Luna is lovely, but when she says, I lost all my possessions, I cry. Luna holds Harry Potter's hand. That's a big step. I love them. I hope Seeley Flanagan's inner Luna finds friendships of more Harry's, Neville's, Ginny's, Hermione's, and Ron vibe friends. That's something worth fighting for. Like, I just see, like, the idiosyncrasies of that sweet Luna. I'm like, oh, I know her. She has roller skates in my bill. You know what? Like, oh, that's a rare bird that I love.
I love Luna. She's just so, like,
especially
sweet, in the docile, book. And she just doesn't, like...
I get Kimmy's take from the movies, but, like, from the books, she's, like, this quirky girl that I just
A moment in book seven that's Harry ends up at her house and he ends up in her room, and there's a lot of things in these books that make me cry, but this scene makes me bawl. It's just like the sweetest thing. Anyway, we'll talk about it when we get there.
More Luna later.
You know what, for being one of the shortest movies but the longest book, we got through that one pretty faster than I thought.
Seriously, like an hour and 10 minutes of that, it took JK 7,000 pages.
Well, there's a lot of good stuff that's not in there. So still recommend reading the books, people. But I love you.
Yeah.
Bye, everyone. Thanks
for listening. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Talk Like a Mother Parenting Autism podcast. If you are enjoying our podcast, make sure to rate and review us wherever you listen. And if you'd like to support us, you can become a subscriber. Just check out the description of this episode. Give us a follow on Facebook and Instagram for more content. And we'll see you next time.